I think it was a couple of weekends ago, I was reading a national broadsheet, and in one of the sections there was this tale that caught my eye of this bloke who was doing all right in business because he dumped or sacked a number of his customers and clients. And I've listened to some family members who've worked in small business, and I thought, boy, I'll bet you they'd love to hear about that guy's story. Now, I doubt you've ever thought about the relative happiness of our dentists when we're sitting in that chair, mouth open, drill looming. But next time you cancel your appointment at the last minute or don't pay your dental bill on time, you might want to think about my next guest. About 15 years ago, Des's Paddy Lund walked into his reception area with a motorised chainsaw and used it to cut up his reception desk. Now, let me stop right there. Paddy Lund, is this true?
Yes. Yes, that is true. Yes, I'm sorry, I have to tell the truth. That is what happened. I cut it up.
I'm pretty envious. So it was a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
It was.
Mm-hmm. You walked into your dental surgery, started up a chainsaw, and put it through the reception desk.
Yes. Yes. That is true. Well, the reason for that happening may be more interesting than the actual event. I think maybe the actual event is the most important thing.
You then fired and sacked half your patients, or roughly, goodness knows how many there were, the ones who complained, the ones who didn't turn up, the ones who didn't pay your bills. You weren't crazy, just very unhappy.
Well, maybe the craziness came first.
Paddy Lund now earns more money than ever before and works far fewer hours. We've invited Paddy Lund to come in and tell us his story. I really appreciate you giving us your time tonight. Thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Steve.
Tell me what you wanted to be when you were a young kid. Do you want to be a dentist when you were young?
No.
Do you want to be a pilot or a soldier? Or
no,
a truck driver?
Electronics. I wanted to be in electronics. Dentistry was just a chance. I happened to walk into examinations hall. No, it wasn't called that. It was a hall in the University of Adelaide. A long time ago, dentistry was different. The universities were different. The methods of examination were different. It was a lot easier to get into tertiary education. Mm-hmm. And I got a reasonable score. I had the choice. I walked into this hall with all of the faculties lined up around the walls with their various crests. And I thought the dental crest looked pretty cool. So I presented myself at the desk and asked if I could join their faculty. And they looked at each other for a few minutes and then said, well, we can't stop you because you've got a good score. You look a little bit weird. But, yeah, well, it was the time of long hair and mm-hmm. platform shoes. And
what, you had short back and sides or something, did you?
No, I had very long hair. Oh, okay. I had very long hair and a bit of a beard. I just looked disreputable.
You became a dentist. Tell me what led up to your frustration where you walked into your own dental surgery with a chainsaw.
Well, that part of it was to do with communication. I felt that I didn't communicate very well with my customers, or you can call them patients, or you can call them clients. I'll say customers because it makes it a little generic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of dentists' problems, maybe not quite so much now, but still to a certain extent, but certainly then, our problems were ivory tower syndrome. We sat in an ivory tower behind this invisible protective shield, and we were insulated from the very people that we did business with. We tried to become uninvolved with them. This was the whole idea in medicine and dentistry. You didn't become emotionally involved with your customers. And there's good and bad about that. The good is that you can't feel them suffering. The bad is you don't ever get back any positive strokes. You don't get any warmth and comfort from the people that you spend most of your lives with. So I found that debilitating emotionally. Mm-hmm. So I decided that I wanted to communicate a bit more. The problem is communication in dentistry is either done at the front desk with lots of people hanging around listening to the private conversation, or it's done in the dental chair where people feel, well, patients feel, somewhat disempowered. Mm-hmm. And not
they're lying back, they've got things hanging out of their mouth and a bib on.
Well, even if they haven't got things hanging out of their mouth, and even if they're sitting up talking, there's still all these instruments that are somewhat fear-inducing hanging around. And then there's the dentist there looking all-powerful and looming menacing.
Mm.
So it's hard for people to have a human conversation. Mm-hmm. It's hard for people to say exactly what they want and what they like and what they don't like. And I found I didn't get much back from that particular kind of contact. So I decided I wanted to talk with my clients in a more of a homely situation, not like your little lounge out there that I've been comfortably sitting in drinking mm-hmm. a cup of tea. And so I made, in my dental building, four little lounges for my clients to sit in with their name on the door and their own little tea set and their food. And I thought, well, this will empower them and they will be able to talk to me as an equal.
Mm-hmm.
However, it didn't quite work out like that because the nurses or the care nurses, as I called them, or I still call them care nurses, had the habit of talking to people at the front desk. This was just how everything mm-hmm. always was. It always was like that. And so even though I built these rooms, the care nurses would still congregate around the front desk with their clients and talk with them there and not take them into the lounge, take them directly into the operatory or the surgery to see me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get a chance to get into the lounge to chat with them. And no matter what I said, little changed. If I spoke very, very loudly for long enough, maybe one or two clients would greet me in the lounge. But I quickly ran out of steam because I'm not normally an angry person. I don't find it easy to continually be angry and push that. So I thought, what am I going to do? How am I going to get my clients in there? And then one weekend it came to me, the answer, which was, it crept into my brain very sneakily, and I thought, no, I can't do that. But it kept coming back. It kept sneaking in. And the little voice was saying, go and cut up the reception desk, and then nobody can congregate there, because there won't be a reception desk. So
that's right. That's right.
And the voice kept talking to me, and eventually I took notice of it, and I went in there and I got the saw with the help of Marilyn's husband Barry, Marilyn, one of my care nurses, and we held the desk firmly and chopped it and then carted it out the back in little pieces.
Was that liberating for you as a boss of a business to chop up your front reception desk?
Oh, scary. I'm about liberating. No, I think the liberation came a little later. I think the fear was there first. Well, what have I done?
Right.
You know, this $3,000 reception desk.
Mm-hmm.
Can I put it back together again? I thought the next morning.
What have I done?
Yes, but yeah. No, I couldn't put it back together. So anyway, this was Sunday. You asked me which day. It was actually a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
When the ladies came in on Monday,
no reception desk.
Well, they went to congregate and they couldn't. Well, not in the same way.
Mm.
So. They were like a swarm of angry bees, female bees, buzzing around, wondering where to settle. And when their first clients came in, they were
mm-hmm.
wondering what to do. And eventually, they figured, well, they'd have to take them into the little lounges. And so it worked.
Your plan worked. Yeah.
My craziness worked, yeah.
Well done.
Yes.
My guest is Paddy Lund. He's a man who ditched and dumped a number of his clients, ended up making more money than ever before and working fewer hours. Tell me, just give me sort of in point form what you do. You, as I understand it, you fired or ditched or sacked a number of your patients, the ones who complained, the ones who didn't turn up for their appointment on time, or the ones that didn't actually pay their bills on time. You got rid of them. And you focused on the people who appreciated you as a dentist and your work, and you showed that as well to them. You said, I'm a good dentist and I'm going to look after you properly.
Fight is a journalistic term, but that sounds exciting.
Well, correct me. What's the best term?
Divested is probably a good word.
Okay.
Divested in a caring way. Because
perhaps you'd be happier at another dental surgery. Goodbye.
a little nicer than that, even. I think I would suggest to clients that didn't seem to appreciate what I did, I would suggest to them that there were other dentists that they might visit, and I would find a dentist for them. I would ring another dentist and ask if they could see this person in a particular circumstance. And I would say to the particular person, look, we don't seem to see eye to eye. You don't seem to appreciate what I do enough to pay my bill, or you don't seem to appreciate what I do enough to seem grateful, or you come late for your visits and then it's difficult for both of us. So I assume from that you don't appreciate what I do. And I feel that there is another person who you may get on with better. And strangely enough, that's exactly what happened. The reports I got back were that many of the customers that I felt were my D customers became A customers of other businesses because they wanted different things in their clients than I did. So it worked out well for everybody. It is not fair to treat or serve people who don't exactly want what you have when there are other people who can treat them better.
25 minutes to 10, Paddy Lund is my guest. This is ABC Local Radio Queensland.
ABC Local Radio Queensland.
Tell me the story then of how you actually ended up making more money. Now, I don't want to know how much money you had, but how did that chainsawing up your front reception desk, changing the way the whole sort of reception area, sort of the whole change of design, the whole changing of the culture of your office by the sounds of it, the whole atmosphere actually led to you working less yet making more money? Because I can tell you now that there are, you know, 20,000-30,000 small business people listening going on, how did you do it? Because they're exhausted, they're working hard, often husband and wife teams in small businesses, you know, working on margins of 3% or less. How did you do it?
Okay. There's a principle in business, well, there's a general principle for life called Pareto principle. It's been applied to business. And to paraphrase Pareto principle, you get 90% of your money from 10% of your clients, and to paraphrase it again, you get most of your hassles from the other people that aren't particularly in tune with what you do. So anybody who is in business realizes that they have customers who they don't really enjoy serving and who actually cost them money. All businesses have customers that cost them money. And not only do those customers cost them money, they cost them time, because there are people who take an inordinate amount of time to make happy, and even then, often they're not happy. So money, time, plus people who do not really want what you have to offer and do not really appreciate the things that you do, suck your energy from you. They take away the positive emotions that you have. And then when you have a nice person come in who really does want what you have and really is happy to pay for it, you have little positive emotion left to give to them. So you lose in two ways. One, you spend a lot of time dealing with a person who doesn't really want what you have to offer and often doesn't pay their bill because they don't appreciate what you have. And then you have little time or energy left for the people who really do want what you have to offer. So if you can, in any business, persuade gently the people who are your D and C customers to go elsewhere, and you are left with less customers, but they are more desirable and more in tune with the things that you do, you will do far better, because you will be able to serve those customers better. You'll be able to spend more time with them, you'll be able to chat with them, and you will be able to find out exactly what they want and give it to them.
Now, I think you have other businesses other than just your dental surgery now, don't you? You have like things like coffee shops or some sort of retail outlets, is that right?
No, it's a reasonable mistake. No, I run my dental business like a coffee shop. I have a large espresso machine that I imported from Italy about 20 years ago. It's got big handles on the top of it that you pull down. Not one of these ones where you just press the button. You pull the handles down. It goes, and it's got a big copper boiler on top. So if you walk into my dental surgery by mistake, if somebody happens to leave the door unlocked because the door is locked, and if you happen to know that it was a dental surgery, which you probably wouldn't because there are no signs.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's no
entry in the phone book. But if you happen to walk in, you'd find it looks like a coffee shop.
Now, so you're making more money now, but you're actually enjoying your business. You're enjoying what you do.
Greatly more. And instead of working 50 or 60 hours a week, I now work 22 hours a week. I make twice as much as I used to make.
Because you concentrated on that worthy, worthwhile 10% of customers that earn you 90% of your income.
The people who really want what I have to offer, and I don't spend my time persuading people to have things that they don't really want. It's not uncommon, because I work only by referral from my current customers, it's not uncommon that people thank me for the privilege of being my customers, or entreat me to take them as new customers because it's hard to get into me.
One of the basic concepts of small business is the customer is always right. You don't believe that?
I play the game that the customer is always right. It's a nice game and pleasant game to play, and I will play it until the point that it starts to cause me or the people I work with unhappiness, and then we will quickly stop playing the game, because it is only a game. And I think customers really understand that. Nobody really believes that the used car salesman is giving them a bargain just because they're a nice person. I've got this car that was only driven 2 miles by the wife of a pastor on Sundays, and it's I'm giving it to you for 50% off just because you're a nice person. It's unreasonable. People realise that everyone is interested more in their own welfare than other people's welfare.
Mm.
So I think customers sometimes, not all customers, but most customers find that refreshing when we can be honest with them and say, no, our happiness is paramount. And also, I will support the people I work with above the welfare of a customer. I'll give the welfare of the people I work with more credence than the welfare of a customer. Very rarely comes to that.
How many staff have you got?
5.
And they love, by the sound of it, I mean, they must love working there. Do they? Or are you a tyrant to work for?
We have a good time. And it is not unusual for people to come in on their days off just to chat. So that's
a good sign.
That, to me, is a good sign, yes.
Can you give me any advice? Okay, say, Steve Austin, I'm going to go into small business. What advice would you give me about getting that sort of atmosphere in the workplace, that sort of change? It sounds to me like you've thought very laterally, narrowed it down to what you could do, and then changed the whole atmosphere of the space in which you work, remove the annoying clients and said, I'm going to start again. But you started again with people who are paying your bills.
I think it's important to think about what's important in life. And for me, I decided the most important thing in life was happiness. And the most important person in my life is me. And the second most important people are those around me. I decided that I would build my business in such a way that it gave me great happiness. And strangely enough, because human beings are social animals and we enjoy the company of pleasant people around us, pleasant, happy people around us, the way that it turned out I could gain my own happiness was to supply happiness to those around me. So my aim in business is to give people, my team, my business family, and my customers, more happiness than they had before they came to my business. So if I can if someone walks out of my door and is more happy than when they came in, and this happiness continues, it's not just a short-term thing, then I feel that I've done my job. And people innately realise that happiness is very important.
Have you? How long has this business model been going for? How long ago was it that you actually chopped up your reception desk?
Oh, 15 or 20 years ago.
So it works. Yeah, it's tested.
But I don't know, the reception desk was the beginning of the happiness thing. I think it started a little earlier. Like everyone, I went through a somewhat crisis point in my life when
yep.
I decided things were very, very difficult. As mm-hmm. it turned out, it was my business that was driving me crazy. So I decided that unless I could get more happiness from my business, I would kill myself.
Mm-hmm. That was the choice you came to?
I basically came to that choice. Either things have got to change dramatically or it's not worth living.
Final question. Have you any professional associates who said, mate, how did you do it? Can I steal your model and do it myself? Like, can I say, you know, I want to do the same thing in your profession?
I talk in various parts of the world about these things, and people listen and take various parts of my model for their own. I don't know of anyone who's done it exactly the same, nor would I wish anyone to do it exactly the same, because everybody is unique. So, yes, people do. Probably not so much in Australia, because one finds it hard to be a prophet in one's own land.
That's true. Paddy Lunn, thanks for coming in and tell me your story.
You're very welcome, Steve. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
A pleasure. Paddy Lunn is my guest.